Project hasn't finished looking at the Civil War numbers yet, is that right?
No, and I think that's going to be a huge challenge.
Would your sense be that the final numbers in and around the same as the War of Independence are lower or higher?
Well, it's generally held that it's higher. It's over a shorter period. I mean, there are figures for the National Army. They're clearly incomplete. Mm. Figures compiled by chaplains, for example. Michael Hopkinson, who did the first big study of the Civil War, has produced some figures. But he would say himself, these are very provisional. Mm. Republican side, similarly, and the civilian side, where there's lots of civilians. It's ironic we focus on the 77 executed by the government, or the government who forced, we know, killed perhaps 150, perhaps 200 people. Other than that, what we now regard as extrajudicial, almost as murder, we don't know how many Republicans killed. We know they killed loads of people, loads of civilians. Community history and family memory and so on is terribly important because you can't do it all from Dublin.
So for the whole period, if you take it from 1916 to 23, you're looking at maybe about 5,000 deaths, something like that?
No, I'd say you're looking at more. Some of these deaths are problematic. You have a handful of Republicans, for example, who are in prison in 1919, 1920, who die of influenza. Mm-hmm. Now, I have included them because they were in prison when they got it. The population as a whole gets completely, as we know, swamped by influenza in 1918, 1919. So killings of women, where they look as though it's a personal or sexual motive, right? Usually jealousy. They're very hard pinned down. When Crown forces are accused of this, there's more likely to be an investigation and prosecution of the supposedly accidental shooting of a woman than a man, right? Particularly if she's in company of solitary company of a soldier or a policeman. I think even there's more work to be done. Example, I was in Cork last week looking at the Cork Examiner, and there's a photograph of an ex-soldier in his uniform who's just been found, who's been shot dead. The family probably put it in. What they don't add is the story, and the story, which is pretty clear and uncontested, is that he was caught in the act of raping a girl by an off-duty British soldier who challenged him and then shot him. And the girl gives pretty graphic evidence and so on. Mm-hmm. But if you weren't careful, you'd describe his death as an ex-soldier. That's probably another IRA killing. Mm-hmm. Whereas in fact, he's shot by an off-duty NCO as they tried to violate this young girl. The photograph, putting the photograph of him in his uniform is, whether deliberately or not, you know, it would mislead you into thinking that he had died because he had served his king and country.
This kind of conflict especially blurs the lines between crime and war and all these kind of concepts. So how does a society recover? How does it get back to normal, to a non-violent state?
This is the amazing thing. Really, early 1924 on, the gun kind of disappears from Irish politics, and the gun as an accoutrement for robbery, because of loads of guns everywhere, they just kind of disappears. It's very striking how quiet Ireland become. I'm not exactly sure when, but certainly by the end of 24, Ireland is no longer the Wild West. Agrarian disputes and so on, people fighting outside pubs and all that kind of thing. But, you know, they're using their fists or they're using slash hooks or whatever, but they're not using abandoned weapons or anything like that.
Why do you think that is? Because a lot of places, of course, that doesn't happen.
I know, absolutely. It's a mystery. It's a profound mystery. I mean, it indicates a strong societal desire for the place to calm down and a kind of societal intolerance for continuing armed violence. And my grandfather was captured in March 23. He got out in August 24. He got married 2 months later. So maybe there's an effect, certainly amongst activists. You know, there were 11,000 Republicans or so interned. A lot of them, my granny's brother was interned in the north for 2 years. He gets out into Christmas Eve 24, he goes to America. And perhaps a lot of people who've been activists, either and or got married or whatever, and who tried to start their lives. Kevin Higgins in particular was worried not simply by Republicans, but the idea of social disorder and the lower and bad elements in society getting guns and using violence and refusing to pay their bills and all this kind of stuff. He had a wider sense of society falling apart. But that proves to be utter nonsense, you know. Bills get paid, even land agitation almost disappears in most of Ireland, and the place becomes a very quiet, poor, backward new state, but not a violent place at all.
The people who had done this killing, did it affect them? Were they haunted by it? Or did they just settle down in this, what turned out to be a peaceful society afterwards?
I think that the answer to that varies. I read recently a very striking reference written by Sean Lamass in 1942, I think, for a man called Charlie Dalton. Now, Charlie Dalton was pro-treaty, like Lamass. His associates murdered Lamass's brother in the Civil War. Well, after the Civil War, actually. But Lamass writes a very interesting and quite long, kind of freehand account of Charlie Dalton in November 1912, Bloody Sunday. And he says, look, this guy was very young. We felt he was too young to be with us. He was shaking beforehand. He was absolutely devastated afterwards. He kept hearing, telling us to turn off a tap, which is gurgling, because it reminded of something he'd heard that day. That's a really strong account of somebody who was never the same. You know, Glass, he never got over it. And Charlie Dalton was himself involved in the Red Cow murders for three young fellas who were doing nothing but putting up posters, were taken out, ultimately shot the Red Cow. So he's a bad boy, if you like, from a public point of view. I thought it was very generous of the mass to write a reference for him. But for everybody, anyone like that, I met lots of local Republicans. And most of them, as far as I can see, were no more scarred by killing our people trying to kill them than the ordinary run of people who were, I'm sure, some of them, their hands shook, some of them probably had drink problems, some of them had nightmares. So did the general civilian population. I think we overdo, and it's going to get worse, we overdo this idea of kind of shell shock and trauma and how it works out as a kind of pathology in people's lives thereafter. Most of the Republicans I knew who killed people and so on, you know, they kind of regretted it, but they weren't apologizing, and they didn't, as they didn't let the shakes, and same on the Free State side. You can see this Free State at times pursued the IRA with great ferocity at local level. Sometimes they'd let their mates off, sometimes they wouldn't. But you know, people, men and even women can kill and arrange killings and say, well, that was, you know, there was a war and that was my duty. We have to get over the idea that everybody is equally shocked by the idea of killing a fellow human being in inverted commas legitimate circumstances. The same in Northern Ireland. And without being mentally scarred thereafter, or visibly scarred in any sort of behavioural way.
Okay, you know, Hoppin, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.